Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly here.
And yet again, another beautiful Southern California day. It's just hard to believe that we have so much sunshine when so many people are just doused in snow.
I talked to my dad on Skype today, and he literally looked like he was like in Antarctica. Like he had like a scarf near him. I'm like, where are you? I thought he was like skiing. He's like, I'm outside. He was like shivering. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm in a t-shirt and pants right now outside.
It's even shorts weather today.
It's ridiculous.
My on my way here, it was 77 degrees.
Well, you know what? It's really funny. I saw this one girl on one of our cold days, in quotes. It was probably, what, like 40s, 50s, and she had shorts on. So I look over, I'm like, oh my God, you're in shorts? She goes, I'm from Chicago. This is nothing.
This
like,
is
are you kidding?
Beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, my
ridiculous.
Goodness. Well, I get a change of pace next week because I'm going to be in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
So nice.
We can actually do the show from there.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
That would be great.
Wow.
I want to come with you. We'll do the show from there together. Now I'll be here holding down the fort.
Just want to give out our phone number because this is a live call-in show, unless you're listening to it on iTunes. But if you are listening live, we would like you to call us with your questions, and we are happy to give you our little pearls of wisdom. Well, you may not think they're pearls. You might think,
they're pearls.
But we think they're pearls. That's area code 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And we also love your emails, and I know that you've been sending those, so we're very happy to have some more for our talk today also. How was your week, Kelly?
Well, my younger one is sick once again, so it kind of threw me for a loop today. But no, I mean, other than that, everything's pretty good. I feel like since having kids, time just goes so quick. I remember once I dated this guy, and he's like, once you're out of college, time goes quick. And I feel like it started to go quick, but even with kids, like, I just feel like I can't even, I don't know if I'm just so crazy busy, mm-hmm. but the days just seem to fly. Like, I feel like, you know, I can't believe it was a week ago, we were like sitting here, it just kind of goes, which is good. I mean, I like being busy.
I think also the older that we get, and we cross the sort of the halfway mark, it's like mm-hmm. you kind of look at the world differently. Like on the one hand, you're kind of climbing up, and it seems like time goes on forever.
Yeah.
But then for me at least emotionally and mentally, when I sort of grasp that I'm probably around that halfway mark, maybe even a little past it, and whoa, it's kind of like, it's getting shorter and shorter. So I understand that what you're saying, but I think it's even more so as you get older, the time perspective changes.
Wow.
Try not to think about it too much because it gets frightening, especially because, you know, my mom passed away very young.
Oh, she did?
She was only 58 years old.
Oh,
so,
wow.
But I don't think that has much to do with genetics as much to do with she didn't take good care of herself.
Yeah.
Whereas my dad, he made it to 89 and as a Holocaust survivor who'd been through everything, the fact that he made that long was amazing.
Amazing.
So we don't really know much about genetics in our background in terms of, you know, what that looks like generationally. But knock on wood, I've got another 50 years to go.
Yeah, you're spunky. You got it. I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with attitude, too, and, you know, your zest for life. I don't know. I'm a big believer in that.
Well, today, I think I have something other than zest for life. I have spilkas, which is ants in the pants.
I love that.
Basically, I have the jitters. I had such a emotionally charged week with some of the clients that I've been working with and some of the couples where their marriage is probably not going to work out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the pain of divorce and telling children and, you know, trying to do that with integrity and without throwing each other under the bus and being kind-hearted. And, you know, when people get into that state of being righteous and feeling like they've been wronged, the attitude of entitlement to, well, you did this to me, so I get to do that to you, and how to intercept that tit-for-tat cycle because it just puts people in this fear space so that they become in survival mode, fearing that they must defend themselves. So they're defending sort of preemptively where the actual attack hasn't occurred, but in their mind they fear that it is. So they're already behaving as if the attack has occurred, thereby attacking the other.
Oh, we
got a
call.
A caller?
We do. Very
excited.
Hi, you're on air live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, good. Hi. How are you?
I love your show. I've been listening the last couple of weeks. I've really been enjoying it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Can you give us a code name? You don't have to identify yourself, but who are we going to call you?
How about Roxanne?
Roxanne. I like that name.
Roxanne.
How can we help you, Roxanne?
Thought I'd pick something racy.
I like it. Sexy.
So what's going on?
Well, I'm not sure this is really on topic, and I'm kind of embarrassed to bring it up, but
there is no
I've been married for about 11 years now, and we never have sex anymore.
Okay, and how long ago did that start?
I'd say about 6 months ago.
Okay, and did anything change in that 6 months?
You know, I don't know that anything really changed. One of our children was kind of ill for a while, not seriously, but enough that it kind of, you know, wreaked havoc on the family schedule. And ever since then, we really kind of, you know, put a lot of stress on the family. We were really at each other's throats, and I think it kind of, you know, damaged our relationship. And now it's like really hard to get that intimacy back.
So was it more of a gradual decline? Or was it kind of like one day you were having it and the next day you weren't?
No, it was more of a gradual decline over time, you know, and it was almost like I didn't even realize it wasn't happening.
Right.
It was just really sad. But, you know, that's really what happened because I was so worried about my daughter.
Sure.
Does your husband have a sense that this is an issue, or are you the one holding that out there and he doesn't necessarily agree?
No, he thinks it's more of an issue than I do.
I feel like I need to correct it.
To be perfectly honest, most of the time it's not that I don't want to, but I'm so tired at night or in the morning or whenever we seem to have 5 minutes here or 5 minutes there that it just, and forget that I said 5 minutes because if he heard that I said 5 minutes, he'd be mad. It takes longer than that, but you know what I mean.
We get it.
Well, tiredness can certainly play a huge role in one's sexual desire, arousal, interest. But also, it sounds like when you said the two of you kind of lost your connection during caring for your daughter, I wonder if you may have also built up some resentments toward one another that makes it harder to want to.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, and I feel like I kind of just lost, you know, interest. I mean, it's not that I love sex. I mean, I always have, but it's just, you know, sometimes when I'm with him, I'm looking at him as the guy I asked to take out the trash who didn't do it versus, you know, the guy I married 10 years ago.
Is it a lot of times with women too, it's like it's almost like going to the gym. It's like getting there is so hard, but once you're there, it's enjoyable. Do you feel that way, that it's almost like that beginning part is the hardest, but once you're doing it, it's okay? Or it's almost
once I'm into it and I've kind of passed that point, I'm good to go.
Right. It's just that initial sort of revving up.
Yeah, getting motivated. And now I feel like it's been so long. I know this sounds strange because obviously I've slept with him a million times. I've been married to him for 10 years, but now it feels like it's going to be really awkward.
Well, one of the things that I suggest would be to spend some playtime together. You know, like go out on a date, you know, carve some time to just do something that you don't even have to put sex on the table. Just start over by simply becoming reacquainted on a connectivity level.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you need to be romanced a little bit again to sort of look at him in that way. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be sex immediately, but just sort of in that way where, you know, and I hate saying this because it's always like, but I have to do this too. I have to say to my husband, like, look, I need you to plan a date night, or I need you to do something romantic. And in some ways I feel like, oh, that takes the romance out of him because I'm telling him what to do. But it's like, sometimes they don't even know, you know, they don't know. And you need to be pretty direct and straightforward. Like, this is kind of what I need. And, but it does feel good in the end, you know, to get that and to sort of look at your partner in that romantic way.
Well, and because, you know, my daughter was sick for a while there, you know, sometimes we have trouble finding sitters. So we certainly can do that. Are there other things that we can do that we could just do at home, maybe? Oh, did it help?
Absolutely. I mean, what kind of things when you were dating did you feel like you liked to do? I mean, was there anything inside? Like, my husband and I used to love to play Scrabble. It sounds so nerdy, but it's the truth. I mean, is there anything that you used to do before, you know, while you guys were dating that can kind of bring you back to that time?
Well, you know, we did a lot of hiking, which obviously we can't do at home. Right. We do like to watch movies together most of the time. You know, we have similar tastes and that kind of stuff. And believe it or not, this beats Scrabble for nerdiness. We like to read books and discuss them.
I love that. It's so cool. So you could do that. Or even, you know, what's funny about hiking is that adventure. But I wonder if you could almost create like a little scavenger hunt in the house. Like, you know, you do it or your husband and you guys make different clues around the house and kind of brings back a little bit of that adventure. But you're, you know, you're staying in.
Maybe, you know, that's a really good idea.
It'd be kind of cool.
And maybe I could get a diamond ring at the end. What do you think?
I like that.
Hey, also, what time do the kids go to bed?
All right. Well, so my marriage is not over, right?
That's not over. No. What time do your kids go to bed?
Well, my daughter usually goes sometime around 8:30, and my son is a little bit later than that. But, you know, usually from, like, you know, 9:30 on, we have time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's probably no harm in putting the kids to bed early once in a while.
You deserve it. You have to remember that. I think we put so much priority on our kids, and you know, sometimes we just need to put the husband as priority, or, you know, the marriage.
I also think of the word sensuality as a really important part of intimacy in relationships, and not just sexuality. So oftentimes, especially in situations like this, when it has been a long time and people feel a little awkward, it's hard to just jump right in. It almost feels like it might be a one-night stand, even though it's somebody that you've had
That's exciting to me.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean.
So, you know, thinking in the realms of, you know, if there are certain smells or certain sounds or certain things that you both take delight in, you know, maybe cooking up some kind of really exotic dessert together after the kids go to bed and playing in the kitchen that way, that can often create a little bit of sensualness.
I like that.
That can turn sexual if you want it to.
Yeah, that is a good idea too. So a scavenger hunt and some sexy cooking.
Yeah, exactly. I like it.
And then you send us what you make, especially brownies, cookies, you know, anything of that sort.
Apple pie.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess now that you talk about it, you know, talking about being sensual, part of the problem too is, you know, once you have kids, you just don't feel probably as attractive as you used to. You know, that changes, and it's so that I have to think about how much that factors in here too.
Of course, and I think too, I know for me, sometimes I just need to dress the part. It's really easy to put on the yoga pants and put on the, you know, zip-up hoodie, and, you know, because it's like, I got two boys at home and I'm running around, but it's like, I notice literally when I put on a dress, I feel better. So I think even if you dress the part, you put on the makeup, you're not even going anywhere special, you can go to the grocery store, you know, but you suddenly will feel a little bit more different.
And try to remember too, you know, guys are far less critical of women's bodies than we are of our own. And, you know, they don't really care about that extra 10 pounds. And I don't even know if that's what you're talking about, but certainly we can sometimes feel awkward and our bodies have changed and we're not as attractive and not as sexy. But the reality is they don't really care.
Right. It's true.
They really don't care.
Yeah, they really don't care. Because to them, a lot of the sexual pleasure is simply about the feel of it and the closeness. And, you know, they say a little more cushion is better.
Better for the pushing.
So we won't be too graphic here, but that's a lot of noise in your own head, I think. And it's probably not reality-based. So when you have those thoughts, if you can remember that those are just thoughts and they don't have any power unless you put fuel behind them.
Right.
So, you know, if you say that, oh, I'm not sexy enough or I'm not desirable enough, that's a thought that if you then behave as if you're not, then you've given it power. But if you say, well, that's just bull, and you know what, I'm perfectly adequate, I'm good enough, in fact, I'm hot and I'm sexy, then you put that energy out there and then you're going to start to feel more of that.
So like some positive self-talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get some sexy lingerie.
Bring that sexy back.
Yeah. Hey, Roxanne.
All right. So we're going to do dessert. We're going to do a scavenger hunt. I'm going to think positive, sexy thoughts, and I'm going to not wear yoga pants.
And no hoodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies, thank you so much. I'm going to try all these things, and maybe I'll call you back in a few weeks and let you know how it turned out.
We'd love
Wonderful.
That.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, great call.
Yes.
It's the kind of
very
stuff
common,
I love to
very
talk
common
about.
Issues. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think there's so many listeners out there that can relate to that.
Well, especially too, because it's such, like you said, it's such a common issue
right.
for so many people, and it doesn't even have to be about kids. It can be about work. It can be mm-hmm. about so many things that as we get older and we climb that social ladder and we climb that
yeah.
financial responsibility ladder,
yep.
we start to put all those things ahead of our personal needs for comfort, for nurturance, for love, for attention, mm-hmm. for cuddles, for all those things.
And the husband can feel like a roommate.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's true. It's like there's so many things to get done on that checklist, and sex doesn't become a priority anymore. I wonder what your thoughts are on scheduling sex.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes that's what actually has to happen.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's an activity. Right?
Yes, exactly.
It's not always available spontaneously.
Right.
Because
exactly.
it's sometimes, especially with a house full of kids or
yeah.
commitments and stuff, you can't actually move those around at will. They
right.
have, they are some things that come first and they are priorities.
Yeah. I remember at Parenthood, they used to, she wrote on the shared calendar, Funky Town. That's what they called it. Funky Town on the shared calendar. So they
oh,
knew
funky
at that
town.
Yeah.
That's when we're going to have sex.
Exactly.
Got it.
It's very funny.
It's
very
funny.
So funny. So his brother saw and said, take me to, he was like making fun of him. Funky Town. He's like, he was all embarrassed. It was very funny. But yeah, no, I think there's merit to scheduling because look, I mean, it's true. There's so many hours in a day. It's, you know, it's like anything, any other appointment, you got to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And please, anybody out there, this is not an on-topic show. We just come
right.
up with topics so that we can have something to talk about.
Right,
but
exactly.
We will take any and all of your questions, and
yes.
if we can't help you, we will try to give you some recommendations and resources on where you might be able to get that help.
Right.
So please, don't be shy. Give us a call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And we just want to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, we do
share.
Have an email. You want to go ahead and read
yeah.
this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I have a bunch of, I have so many things I want to talk about today.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Like I told you, I've got Spilkas. That's
I love the Spilkas.
Maybe I have Spilkas. It should be a word for, what they call it? Diarrhea of the mouth. I will try
I have
not
that.
To be gross, but I do.
I have, my husband thinks I have that.
All the time?
All the time.
Oh,
there's,
dear.
There's no anxiety with it. It's just the way it is.
That's
so funny.
It. Oh, right. My goodness. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So here we go. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I'm turning 30. I've been married for almost 4 years to an amazing man. I've always had a little interest sexually in women as well. I barely got to explore in my 20s because I met my husband then. I'm suddenly feeling the need to explore women, but I don't want to lose my husband. What do you think? Signed, Exploring the Other Side.
Well, I'm so glad that this has come up because, you know what, this is far more common than most people want to acknowledge
mm-hmm.
because people, there's still so much homophobia
yes.
in our society. And so if anybody, I mean, I actually went to a sexuality seminar a long time ago, and the woman who was giving it, she said, one of the common questions she gets, she was predominantly lesbian in the
yeah.
sense that most of her relationships were with women.
Mm-hmm.
And she had come to that decision that that was really where her heart
yeah.
rested and her attraction, et cetera. And, but she said, people would say, well, you know, what is your sexuality? And she said, on what day? I mean,
uh-huh.
you know, at any given day, sometimes she felt more hetero, sometimes
yes.
more homo, sometimes more bi, right in the middle. I mean,
right.
she said, for women especially, that sexuality is far more fluid
okay.
than it may be for men. So women are often attracted very much to sensuality
mm-hmm.
and to the experience of intimacy and connection.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, I have friends who I fall in love with. Like, I'm totally in love with you.
Oh.
You know that? I mean, you know, but it's not a sexual
right.
thing. But
right.
that can often get blended together in
oh,
relationships.
Interesting. Yes. Very interesting.
So just specific, though, to this,
yeah.
This
question.
Woman exploring the other side, I think that having a candid conversation with her husband
yes.
before she feels resentful or wants to act out and then entering into the realms of infidelity, because
yep.
that's what people often do when they don't want to lose something, is they cross the lines feeling entitled
mm-hmm.
to go outside the boundaries because
I see.
They're giving up something. And then she may be compelled to actually do something that would really ultimately hurt
yeah.
and destroy possibly the marriage.
Well, I think also, I think it's that fear of, oh my God, if I tell my husband, you know, he's going to think this or think that. But I think a lot of that, you know, wanting to explore and that feeling closed up, once it's released, I think there's a lot, the person feels a lot better. Not saying that their interests go away, but just that feeling of holding this deep, dark secret. You know, mm-hmm. there's something about sharing it. I also think there's ways to explore that other side without actually, you know, touching another woman. She can have that experience with her husband watching porn, you know, watching two women in the porn. So she feels that attraction and then, you know, doesn't necessarily, you know, need to go outside the marriage. I think there's ways to do it where she can feel like she's, you know, getting her fantasy, but still with her husband.
So I'm going to disagree a little bit on okay. the porn idea. Not so much that, you know, on a moral judgment level.
Yeah.
But I do see so many marriages that are so badly affected by pornography.
Yeah.
Just there's something about it that it really changes the brain and can often change the way people view one another. Mm. So I'm not saying that that's across the board or if occasionally yeah. that was that.
Sure.
Also, it could set in motion where she might be attracted to another woman, but mm-hmm. then if they're watching porn together and he's also attracted to the other
right.
woman, that could actually
have some jealousy.
Uh-huh. And some, you know, it's like one thing if he were attracted to guys as
right.
well. They both shared that. So they were exploring that for him and
uh-huh.
they were exploring that for her. But I'm just keep envisioning this sort of triangulation.
Yes.
Of, you know, where it could have a backfiring effect. It may not.
Right.
But I'd be a little bit more cautious with that suggestion.
I see. Yeah. Okay. I hear you.
But,
yeah.
you know, as they say, different strokes for
different
folks.
So. Exactly.
I guess right. probably just because I've worked in the throes
so
of
many.
Addiction
yeah.
with, and just how brutal it can be. It can be
right.
one of the most destructive behaviors and addictions within a relationship.
Even though
it's not cheating per se, but
right.
is it? I don't know. You know?
So, right. Well, you're saying even in a relationship when they're watching it at the same time.
Yeah, it can be a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, look.
I hear you.
Many people use it. It's so common today, especially.
Right.
I mean, it was sad for me to hear when one time my daughter said, well, it's porn. All guys watch porn. I'm like, really?
Right.
Do they?
Yeah.
Is that really true? Do they all? You know?
Yeah.
It's so commonplace now and accessible.
Ridiculous.
And such. So I don't know. Maybe in a different direction, her exploring, is there some sort of sensuality that she's looking for that she mm-hmm. believes could only come from a woman? And maybe the attraction is about wanting something that her husband isn't providing.
Sure.
And maybe if he also understood this, they could grow into maybe learning about some more like Kuma Sutra, different
yes.
sort of sexual experiences
yep.
that have a lot, like we were talking to the other caller,
yeah.
Roxanne, about sensuality
exactly.
as the dominant thing. So I would ask her
sure.
to try to explore that as well.
I think those are great options. Very cool. So yeah. what else did you want to discuss?
My brain is going in so many different
directions. Yeah, well, there's a lot going on here.
I was, you know, we were going to talk some about childhood issues and, you know, how those play
yes.
out in relationships. But it was when I was driving here today, I was thinking about, in addition to my practice sort of being on fire this mm-hmm. last week with different people having some really serious
issues.
Emotional crises, I've also been exploring for my own self some of my lack of social media
right.
direction in, you know, like my new website and some of my products. And, you know, people keep saying you have to do social media,
mm-hmm.
you have to do social media. And like yesterday, I actually posted a new picture on my personal Facebook page because
yes.
I've not done anything on Facebook
wow.
in years. And all these people writing back, oh, it's beautiful.
That's
it's
great.
Nice.
You got a good response.
Oh, this is so lovely. But I was talking to all these different people about social media and, you know, it's amazing, I guess it's sort of related to relationships, how distrusting I could become of people because mm-hmm. some of the proposals people were giving me for the exact same, you know, sort of activities in
yes.
social media, like ranged from a couple $100 a month to the same activities, upwards of over $6,000 a month for the same thing. It's like people think that if you don't know how to do something, you'll be so naive that what you're giving them is like magic.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And
then, sure.
So as I was listening, I started, okay, I got to get over my fear of this stuff and I have to just go and
right.
start to look at, well, what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And finding these like central servers, like I was describing to
yes.
you, like a grand central station of social media. There's little mm-hmm. services that do that kind of stuff. So I was wondering, wow, this whole social media thing, and how does that lead to the communication patterns of people today?
You young know, people or just
young
in general?
People, and now us,
yes.
too, right? Because really,
yeah.
to be with it in this society,
mm-hmm.
we have to be on board with that.
All that.
so yeah. many people are using it.
Right,
so
exactly.
So what do you think about that?
I think it's horrible. Here's I'm such a grandma. I know I've talked about this before, but...
A grandma who likes porn.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I mean, I think I am a little old school in that way. I mean, to me, there is nothing like that face-to-face communication where you can see somebody's expression. They can see yours. There's less ways of there's less ways of misinterpretation. Like, I think that a lot of times with email and text, people can read it with a certain tone where that person didn't have that tone, but in their mind, they thought they had that tone. So I think there's a lot of miscommunication that happens. Can you believe she said that? She said, I'll be there at 7. You know, and it was like,
yeah.
No, she meant, I'll be there at 7.
Yeah.
Like, it's so I think it's very, very difficult. I think so many people today just replace that communication. It's like you've just become lazy. And I think that, you know, friendships take effort and they take time. And I think that a lot of times we're just getting lazy with it. We're just doing simple texts. How are you? And, you know, you just can't get involved. It's like you're just trying to sort of throw it out there that you care about them. But it's like, I just don't feel that same investment, I think, versus when you sit down and you talk to somebody face to face.
Sure. Now, I guess the emoticons help a little bit in terms of expressions.
Right. Exactly. Sure.
So I'm always second guessing myself when I'm sending a text. Is this coming across in that tone? So
sure.
I'm always throwing in some emoticon.
That's hilarious.
Or a flower or something, just because it will soften.
Really? Yeah.
I try to. Yeah, uh-huh. Because I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yes.
That we miss so much of the nuances of tone and inflection. Is somebody teasing? If you know
so
somebody's
hard.
Personality, they could be being just playfully sarcastic. They could actually be bitingly sarcastic,
right,
and
exactly.
trying to hurt you. And you just lose so much of that. And then now with the text messagings that are novels.
Oh, my
like,
God.
You know, I look back at some of my texts just trying to explain a simple thing that then gets misunderstood.
Yes.
And then trying to backpedal. And
you just like, just call me.
I was like, yes, just call me.
I can't stand it. Or I have a friend who I love dearly, but she is like a texter. She doesn't pick up the phone. She has her conversation over text. And, you know, I really like her and I'll respond. But I don't know. It's so much easier to talk on the phone. Like, I just, my fingers hurt. I'm just tired. I don't know. I want to hear the story more auditory rather than visual. I don't want to read a book. If I want to read a book, I'll pick up a book. Like, I just, you know, so I'm old school. What can I say?
Yeah, but it's also, don't you think, time constraints for people, right?
Yes.
Like, I know that when I'm getting ready in the morning to go to the office, somebody will send me a text.
Yes.
And I don't really have time to pick up the phone and call them, but it is, and I think it's going to be quick. So you text back, but then the person has another question, and then you text that back. The next thing you know, I'm like, I'm running late. I'm 15 minutes late because I have been sucked into the
world. To this conversation?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because with a phone call, it's a clear beginning, a middle, and an
end.
Because
you're both saying goodbye.
Yes. Yeah. With a text, it's like, you know, where did the person go? Are they still here? Are they going to write me back? Is this conversation finished? Where am I going? Then I feel rude if I'm not saying, you know, be right back or bye. Like, you know, you can leave this thing open. It could be days,
oh
you know?
Oh, my God. That is so funny. Tiffany was a teenager. I used to watch that. I was great. You just stopped texting that person. You were like going back and forth nonstop. She's, yeah, it's okay. We'll get back to him later. I'm like, aren't you going to say, like, I was trying to micromanage her
text.
Friendships. Like, well, don't you need to say, look, I'm busy with my mom now for
right.
the next 2 hours. I'll call you back.
Yeah.
No, that's just, that's it. And that's the other thing, too, is when you're texting across different generations, the expectations of the communication can also be very different.
This is very funny.
Other.
I'm going to
go
out share. My mom. My mom like will literally like write a text and she'll be like, you know, how are you? Did it? Love, mom. Like it's like a letter. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's you, mom. Like it's from your number. You know, it's really funny, but it is. It's a definite, there's definitely a difference.
So because she has more of that where you have it too, that really being polite and, you know, staying connected, making sure that people understand all that stuff. So you forget that some of that stuff is obvious, but it's the intention behind it is to be kind and to be gentle and to be loving.
Yes, exactly. It's so true. Versus a lot of the teens today, it's like very different. Very different, like symbols and, you know, I feel like I need to catch up on all the symbols and
the
acronyms and all that.
What's the arrow three?
Oh, that's a heart.
Oh, that's a hard toe.
Yes. So oh, if no. you exactly so if you look at it kind of sideways, you'll see it's like
oh,
a heart. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
makes sense now.
Yeah. Who's sending you hearts?
My daughter.
Oh, that's
yes.
so cute.
She's so cute.
That
yes.
is so cute. Yeah.
That's how she often instead of the XOXO.
Right,
right?
Exactly. She'll do the arrow, the greater sign, or whatever you want to call it. The
you know, too though, doesn't it kind of back to relationships because it's so fascinating? Yeah. It tends to dilute some of our terms of endearment to people who are really special. I mean,
oh.
how often do I now write to friends XOXO, XOXO?
Yes,
you
know, yes.
It's like, and then I write that to Christopher, and he doesn't think it's special
right.
anymore. And it really isn't because
yeah.
it's almost an automatic reflex
response.
At the bottom just
yep.
to tell somebody I care about you. But then we don't differentiate
right.
between
exactly.
different people. And
well,
that
that's maybe, when the face-to-face, I feel like, yeah. is key because I think you can tell by looking in someone's eyes if they're sincere and, you know, I don't know. I really miss that. And I worry that, you know, these young kids, it's like they're going to miss that. They're going to miss that empathy, that, you know, compassion for people because they're doing so much of their communicating online and on the phone.
So do you think that that's going to have a childhood, an impact on our generation's
yes.
childhood in terms
yes.
of what do you think the wounds are going to be?
Yeah, I don't think people are going to have as much empathy and compassion. I think it's going to be hard to understand people a little bit. I think there's not going to be probably as much remorse. Like, I think people are just going to be cut off a little bit more emotionally. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think there could also be some falling out in certain friendships because people didn't take the time to actually get to the bottom of understanding misunderstandings.
Yes.
And, you know, as quickly as you can text, it's as quickly as you can turn off your phone and turn off a relationship. And I think that maybe people won't develop the ability to have tolerance and patience and flexibility within relationships to, you know.
100% so agree. Yes.
And it feeds the brain with a sense of immediate gratification.
Yes.
That I want this now and I want this now. And then
yep.
that level of entitlement becomes just, it's
huge.
The beast.
Yes. Well, I see that with my little one too, because he's so quick to get things on the phone. And, you know, the games pop up quickly and everything's quick. And so it is hard. It's harder to be patient and to wait for things.
I know that it's affected me too, just in the limited amounts of social media that I do engage
yeah.
in. It's like when I do put something out there, I'm actually right there ready. Who's listening?
Yes.
Who's watching? Who's
exactly. Who's liking me? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas we think back in terms of our parents and grandparents' generation that they didn't even have phones.
Ridiculous.
You know? Like, you know, people around my age, like some of them grew up in their first few years with not even a television. There was no television.
Yeah, exactly. It's my parents. Yeah. That's so weird.
Yes.
I told Remy that the internet wasn't around, my son, Remy.
He's like, what?
I swear to God. I said, I didn't have the internet until I was a senior in high school. And it was like, he couldn't even, like, that was like beyond his conception. Like, wait, what? I thought this was around forever. You know, it's so funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Delightful Coach Kelly. And we are here at your service and at your beck and call. So call us at 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. And we do also love your emails.
And we also have a Facebook page, Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. And Kelly's with an I.
It is Kelly with an I. What made you choose? Is that your full name?
Yeah, that's it. My mom had a student that she loved with that spelling. And she always thought, oh, if I have a daughter, I'll name her Kelly. So I like it. I like different spellings.
Oh, here's a question for you.
Sure.
Okay, so my name is D-E-B-R-A,
right.
Dr. Deborah, right? Deborah.
Yes.
And it also can be spelled D-E-B-O-R-A-H.
Yes.
Could also be spelled D-E-B-O-R-A.
Yes.
Right? So there's all different variations. So What do you do? Because I never know how to respond to this. So there's some people, and I don't know if this is an autocorrect or a
yeah.
Siri issue or something, that will relentlessly call me Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, when they text me.
With the wrong spelling.
With the wrong spelling. Even though I sign off on my
yes.
emails oftentimes.
Oh, you do?
With,
yes.
Yeah, with clients, I'll say Dr. Deborah.
Yeah.
And I'll spell it D-E-B-R-A.
Right.
And so is that just a product of people not
paying attention.
Not paying attention.
Well, the other thing is I'm wondering if they put you in their contacts with that spelling.
Ah.
Do you
so
know what I mean?
Siri may auto-correct it for them.
Well, I don't know about that, but I was thinking that every time your message appears, it's coming up the wrong spelling. because your name's popping up. So that's the only other thing I'm thinking. Mm. But yeah, I feel like, unfortunately, there's not much you can do. I mean, the
I feel like it's so petty to tell somebody, the spelling of my name.
I mean, if they had the wrong name completely, I feel like then, you know, you have a right to be like, look, I'm, you know, I'm not Barbara. I'm, you know, I'm Deborah. But the spelling, I feel like you kind of got to suck it up.
Right. The only one that really irks me is when I introduce myself as Deborah. Uh-huh. And it's instantaneously somebody I have never met before.
Oh, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie. Like, whoa.
This
and
is...
Now I have actually started to correct people. And for a good reason, because I actually converted back to Deborah. Deborah's the name. And then I went to Debbie because of what we've talked about, the childhood bullying and people calling me Debra and making fun of me and teasing. So naturally, Debbie was the alternative.
Yeah.
And so I stuck with that. And then when I was in college and definitely by graduate school, I just committed every time I meet a new person, I'm going to say Deborah. Yeah. Now, my old friends who grew up with me as Debbie, it's cute. It's endearing.
Yes.
But when I meet somebody brand new and I shake their hand and they're just like, oh, either Deb or Debbie.
Yes.
Like, wait a minute. That's a different name.
Yeah.
So I'm always very sensitive to not do that.
So what do you say when they call you Debbie?
Well, I will start, depending, if I really think I'm going to have some long-term relationship with this person, then I will usually say, you know, I know lots and lots of people will resort to Debbie because it's more familiar and that's really sweet. But even if we knew each other for 10 years, I really prefer Deborah just because that's the name.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Weird, and I like it.
I love your 10-minute explanation. Like, it's so cute. It's like so sweet.
It's probably so unnecessary, but I'm one of those people. I just get so afraid to insult or hurt people's
feelings.
So
funny that you're having this conversation because I literally just had this conversation with my babysitter last name. Her name is Susie. Her real name's Susan. She hates Sue. She's like, and the same thing. She's like, I introduce myself to people as Susie, and so many times they'll call me Sue. And I'll be like, you know, and she's very sweet too. And so I'm always curious how people sort of say, look, you know, I don't like that. Please don't call me that. It's very hard. But
you know, most people understand and they're not insulted.
Yes.
The ones, though, that really, really make me nuts is I go through that. And the next time I talk to them, hi, Debbie, how's it going?
Oh, my God. They forgot? Or you think they don't care?
I think they don't care.
Well, now I feel bad because, you know, sometimes I call you Deb. Like,
no. You get licensed to do that because we're familiar that way.
I know, but still, now I'm going to be like self-conscious.
No.
So
but
funny.
But Deb isn't a different name.
Like, exactly. It's just,
it's like when
people call me Cal. But you know what's funny? It is really interesting that people are really sensitive about that. And it's true. It's like, as a person, you might not realize that. It's really interesting. I don't know how we got on this topic. It's so funny.
Because I told you, I have diarrhea of the mouth.
Exactly.
Spilkas, and I'm just stewing in my head with so many different things. Like, kind of just racing around up there. Anyway, so thanks for letting me, indulging me to keep talking about these things. But why don't we do another email?
Yes, sure.
Okay, this is one I think we got from a couple weeks ago that we didn't get to before, so we'll do this one. Dear hosts, what is the best way to tell your partner that they have bad breath?
Wow.
Hand him a bottle of mouthwash? No, let me finish.
Okay. Oh, God.
I love my girlfriend, but her breath is downright awful. Do I send her an anonymous note? Do I outright tell her? She's a great woman, and I don't want to offend her, but this is really getting in the way of our intimacy. Signed, close your mouth. I love this.
Okay, so my first thing is, there could be a medical issue.
Absolutely.
Right? Were you going to say that too?
Yes.
I think
a
lot of people don't realize
halitosis.
That. Exactly.
Yes.
So there could be a medical issue. So I think there's a nice way to say that and put it toward the medical issue part of it.
There could be a vitamin deficiency.
Yes.
There could be some other infection going on.
Exactly.
She may not have the proper hygiene also in her, if she's got bacteria growing in her.
Exactly.
Some people also are a little bit more alkaline and some are more base, and so that will have different
taste.
Also, diet.
Yes.
You know, the types of foods that people eat.
Sure.
We are what we eat, so it does come out of our pores. I'm curious, he didn't mention if he doesn't like other ways in which she smells, right? Like
that's
body parts, right? Do you some people, they can be sweating in front of you and have body odor, but their body odor is not offensive to you, whereas other people's body odor
is.
Can be
it is
very,
really
very
interesting,
offensive.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Christopher says he loves my body odor whenever I have it. Like, if I've been
this
sick,
is
it doesn't
so
bother him.
Funny, because my husband says the same thing. And I think that,
that's
like,
true love.
I think you're attracted to certain smells,
yes,
too. I don't think it's like they're being sweet. Like, I think they're just, yes, like, you know, I mean, I it don't does think that you're, like, physically going to be with somebody you don't like their smell.
It's
so
totally,
it's like,
totally.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's that olfactory scent.
Yes.
It's the sense is our oldest one, so that the reminders of smells. I worked with this couple once where, and we'll get back to the email in a minute, but I worked with this couple once where he just was in love with this woman. Everything about her was just amazing.
Yeah.
And we were, he was, you know, she was awesome, right?
Right.
And he came into session once and he goes, you know, I just don't think I can go forward with her. And he was kind of a commitment phobe anyway, so
okay,
I'm thinking this is it. This
yeah
is really an out. He goes, I just don't like the way she smells. And of course, he thought I was going to say, that's ridiculous.
Right, exactly.
And instead, I said, you know, that's going to be a problem.
Sure.
Because
yep
that is one of the deepest, most primitive ways that we stay attracted to somebody is because we like the way they smell.
Yeah.
You know, those pheromones. And I mean, you could have people, you look at them and you go, that's a very unlikely couple. But you go in there and you find out, you know, that they love the way they smell. They
yes
each other smells.
It's so true.
It's fascinating. So anyway, close your mouth. This is a great email.
Yeah.
So go after the medical stuff first.
Right.
And I think, you know, if you have an honest and open relationship, you have to just say, look, something's going on in terms of, you
right
know, odor
exactly
on your breath. And can we just explore that? And I'm
right
sorry, I don't mean to hurt your feelings. I don't want to offend you. But, it, you know, you don't want to not want to be kissed or,
exactly,
or you know, he's going to start avoiding her.
Yeah.
And
I was just going to say, it's either avoiding her completely or having this conversation. And I think absolutely you need to have this conversation because, like you said, she's a great woman. So, I mean, if she is a great woman, she will be understanding, too. And I think if you say it in a gentle way, he sounds like a gentle person. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's writing to us because he thinks we're gentle and we're going to be gentle back.
Right, exactly. Which we are. It's very,
you know,
true.
And there are solutions to it. I mean, if it's a medical issue, then there will be some treatments for that.
Exactly.
And if it's not, it would be a, you know, you just have to do that checklist.
Exactly.
Go down it and explore all the different.
Sure. And
options.
She'll be more aware of it and making sure, because, you know, she doesn't want to turn you off. So I think awareness is action in a lot of ways.
Or does she want to turn him off?
Oh,
that's
no.
A whole other email. We'll assume not.
Exactly. That's a whole different email.
You're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we love your phone calls. We love your emails, but we also love those calls. 323-203-0815 if you're having a problem or a question, if you're having issues with your parents or with your children or with your spouse or
right
with your coworkers,
pets,
with your pets. Whatever, whoever,
neighbors,
with anything that you want to share, we are open to talking. Childhood issues. We all have them.
Everybody does.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and it's funny because I think everybody kind of thinks their childhood is normal because that's what they grew up with until later when they realize, wow, there were a lot of issues or they uncover what happened. Yeah, it's very, very fascinating.
Some people, though, don't think their childhood is normal, and it's not.
Right.
Because it's so far off in left field. I mean, there's so many things that they observe in their families. I think, what do you think about maybe about the end of grammar school, there becomes more awareness?
Well, that's
what
I was going to ask
that,
you.
Because
so
you spend more time with other families.
I think that's a great call. Yep. Mm-hmm. So like fifth grade when you're about 10 and you kind of realize, and oh, wait, hold on. That's different from my family or that doesn't happen in my family. I think that's a great call.
I certainly know that I recognized a lot of things when I started doing sleepovers. You know,
yes.
When you sleep over at other friends' houses, it's like, oh, that mom doesn't do that at all. You know, I had a mom who liked to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and make crepe Suzettes for my friends.
No.
So that was amazing. But she was also the same mom that if you made noise at 8 o'clock in the morning, she was a bear and would come in and tell everybody they had to leave right then and would not be welcome back.
Wow.
So it's
so
like,
yeah,
if you sort of morphed into her schedule of her, her ideas of fun,
right?
And she was a blast.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was
very,
you know,
tough.
Don't wake up the bear.
Right.
The bear
right. Exactly.
Not get woken
so
up.
She was like a night owl.
She was a total night owl. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she could have, you know, we'd have great sleepovers because
exactly
we could party
right
up a storm. You know, make noise, eat too much ice cream.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, whatever, and she would have a laugh about it, but.
Oh, my God.
Not in the morning.
We would be like two ships in the night, me and your mom. Like, I would be up at, like, 6 in the morning.
Well, that was the problem. I was a 5 a.m. waker-upper. I mean, I was that,
really?
That kid who just popped up at 5 o'clock.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, my mother's statement of my claim to fame was that I was an easy child because I learned how to make my own breakfast at 18 months old. So God knows what that breakfast was.
Exactly.
Imagine your little one going to make breakfast.
Dude, my 5-year-old can't even make breakfast, so that's pretty impressive.
Whereas my sister was very much like my mother, so they were definitely on the same schedule. Uh-huh. So they got along better because you know she didn't find her to be as
irritating.
Annoying.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas my dad, on the other hand, he was the early riser.
Yes,
but he would always get up really early and then go off to work.
Mm-hmm.
So he would actually be up and out by like 5:30 or 5:45.
Yeah,
and I'd be like, oh, I don't have anybody to play with, Dad. He's gone and mommy's sleeping. And then the worst thing was when the kids, you know, when kids start to make plans, because we would all ride our bicycles.
Yeah.
So they're making plans at, you know, 8:00 in the morning.
Right.
Let's meet up at 9:00. Well, I couldn't wake up my mom to ask my mom if I could go. So I'd be just sitting there like outside her door going, please wake up. Please wake up. Please wake up.
Well, I can relate. I mean, my parents would sleep late. My mom, I still cannot call my mom before 10:30 on the weekends. They sleep.
Yeah, and when you're an adult and you have all your needs met, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
It's irrelevant, right? So
that's
I can look
point.
Back at all this and just crack up
right,
about it.
Exactly.
It's hysterical. But at the time, it was like there was a little bit of suffering that
of
was
course.
Going on, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Your dad also sleep?
So I think he's like more after my mom's schedule.
Uh-huh.
Like I think he's probably a morning person. Yeah, probably more of a morning person by nature. But yeah, he's in her world now, so...
Oh,
so crazy.
Yeah. So let's see. Any.
I guess back to the childhood issues for a second. So, like, I mean, so do you feel like in your heart people can get their childhood issues resolved?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, my whole model of how I work with people is transferring adversity into strength.
You know,
transforming the. Turning chicken shit into chicken salad, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, or lemons to lemonade.
Yeah.
To make something. Good about what's happened. There's a silver lining in everything, but we have to get out of victim mentality because victim mentality is the be-all, end-all of humanity because it just forces people into this woe is me, this is happening to me.
Yeah.
You know, I have no power, I have no choices.
Right.
And 99% of the time, except if you are a child who is actually being abused, or, you know, you have so many more choices as you become an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So children can be victims, but adults rarely are.
Yeah.
And I also believe in moving beyond survivor mentality also, because survivor mentality in my mind is still, it's a prison itself, but it's maybe minimum security prison, whereas victimhood is maximum security. But I think that we have to get to that thriver.
Yeah.
You know, you can look back on your childhood and you can say, okay, that did happen.
Right.
But I can make different choices now and I can be different. How about
you?
Sure.
No, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I think you have to process it and give yourself that, you know, fair space to go through it. But I agree with you. I think it is kind of dangerous. A lot of people do get that into that victim mode and they feel sort of stuck. But I agree. I mean, you hear all of those amazing stories about people who had those really difficult childhoods and then, you know, came out to be these incredible people.
Right.
So I think it's really, really possible.
Probably one of the biggest tragedies of having, you know, an intense childhood drama or trauma or experiences that we're not nourishing is that we tend to recreate those in adulthood. So subconsciously, we find ourselves being familiar to that kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up flocking toward relationships that are going to give us more of the same, even though we're hoping for a different outcome. So
because it's familiar.
Because it's familiar.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's really challenging because, you know, something may have happened to somebody in their childhood when they were 5 years old, but they recreated it up until they were 45.
Yes.
Now they don't have just childhood issues. They have
adult.
Compounded issues because of the way they ran their adulthood.
Right. That makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's why... We do therapy, and that's why we've been in therapy.
Exactly.
Because it's so important. Yeah. Well, we are getting close.
I know. Almost out of time.
Yeah. So I definitely want people to visit my website, drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. I have lots of books for sale and downloadables and hard copies and... Yeah, it's a brand new website. It's been
out
for just a couple of weeks. It's really, I love it. I love it. And I really want to have people's feedback. So if you do go on, I'd love to get some feedback. And how about you? You want?
Yes, my website is www.kelly, K-E-L-L-I, Miller.com. I also have my books on there for sale, Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband. And my other book is Joy in Solitude, which is a memoir.
Oh, lovely. I have to read those.
Yes. Yeah. Very cool.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Coach Kelly. We're here live every Tuesdays, Pacific time 1 to 2. We love your calls. We love your emails. And until next time, you can also download the show at any time off of iTunes.
Yes. Sounds good.
And off of the website here at latalkradio.com.
Sounds great. All right. We'll see you next week when we talk about loneliness and expectations of love during Valentine's Day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sending love.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.